You know, as real estate investors, we all go through our first ever real estate deal. My name is Daniel Kwok, one of the Kwok Brothers, and welcome to the First Deal Experience podcast, where we highlight successful real estate investors and their first deal experience. You'll hear how they found it, how they broke it down, and how they completed it profitably. Sean Rakitic, everyone. What's going on, my friend?
Hey, how's it going?
Good, good, good. Did I get that right, the last name?
Rakitic, yeah, you crushed it. Good job.
Nice, man. Right on. So for our viewers and our listeners that are listening to this, I don't know whether you're on Spotify, iTunes, wherever, but you probably have heard of his name, but you probably also know him as his YouTube channel, his YouTube alias, Airbnb Automated. It's good to have you here, my friend.
Yeah, thanks for having me on. I'm super excited. It's fun.
Yeah. So this podcast is called The First Deal Experience. And this is when, you know, like we talked about earlier, when I get successful businessmen, real estate investors, and overall just anybody in entrepreneurship. And I have them share their first deal experience. And, you know, one of the things that really, really is common, right, in terms of speaking gigs and engagements that I go to, the biggest question I get is, Daniel, how did you start? Right? Like, what was your first deal? How did you start? Did you feel this way? What do you feel like I have to get ready? And a lot of people kind of share that sentiment. And so obviously today we're talking about nightly rentals. So before we go ahead and talk about your first deal, why don't you share a little bit about yourself, who you are, some things that you would like our viewers to know before you start on your first deal story.
Sure. So I think what could be known about me is I'm not a real estate guy. I still don't think myself as a real estate guy, even though I'm the Airbnb guy. I've never really touched real estate the right way. I'm a serial small business owner, and my oldest company is in the newspaper industry. So I think if there's anything cool to know about me, I've always just been the guy that likes to build things that aren't supposed to work. You know, like I help newspapers not die, help them go digital. And then I got into the Airbnb space in about 2014, and that got really, really fun. And now, of course, my YouTube channel, Airbnb Automated, has been teaching people to do it for a few years.
Yeah, and you put a phenomenal amount of content for free. You know, I watched your videos as well, and I'm like, wow, I can't believe this guy is sharing these things. Like, these are really high-level things. I love it. So real quick, guys, you know, I'm sure a lot of you guys are listening to this on your phone. Go on your YouTube app and go to Airbnb Automated and click on that button that says subscribe. And then also the notification bell as well. And then just do me a favor. If you're free for the next couple hours, just go down all of Sean's videos and just press like. Like, right? And just all of them, every single one of them. And, you know, if you have time, like spare 5 minutes, you can go to the Kwok Brothers too and subscribe. Nice. But now that we got to know a little bit about Sean, do me a favor, my friend. How did you find out about this?
It was kind of like an accident. In late 2014, I was moving like employees into Houston from different cities. So I was recruiting people, and that company was doing good enough at the time that we were looking at like relocation packages as an incentive. And so I moved some people into a high rise in Houston, but then they moved into their own places. And I was that optimistic guy that was just naive enough to think that I should sign a year long lease for somebody who only needed it for 2 months, and I'd figure it out on the back end. So I ended up with a couple apartments where I had to pay like $4,000 in rent at this building, and I had nothing to do with those apartments. So I remember just talking about it with a social circle, and one friend's girlfriend said, you know, I stayed on Airbnb a couple months ago in California. It was pretty cool. You should look at that. And then it didn't even register until 2 months later when I'm really mad about paying my rent. And I'm like, okay, what's this Airbnb business, right? So yeah, I think it was like November 2014. I just put my properties on Airbnb to no longer lose as much money, but they were instantly profitable, like insanely profitable. So I put the one I lived in as well. So I had three apartments. I put both that I was just eating losses on, and then my own apartment in the same building on Airbnb, paying like $6,000 in rents and then generating like $12,000 in revenue per month. And I'm like, okay, this is cool. And I didn't take it seriously until maybe 2017 because I was still busy with my main company, but the Super Bowl was coming to Houston in 2017. And that was like, oh, obviously people are going to spend a ton of money. So we got up to like 10 apartments then, and we made like 15 grand in a weekend. And that's probably when when I and my leadership team decided, you know, this is something to, you know, really double down on. So then from there, you know, February 2017 to Christmas 2019, we went from 10 apartments to 100.
Wow. That's insane. That's That is insane. So let's talk about that first one. You know, it sounded like this intrigue and the expertise you now have in Airbnb really was birthed and formulated out of frustration and also out of curiosity, right? Because if it wasn't for that curiosity, you would never have pursued this full time into the capacity you do today. So share a little bit about the first one. Give us some details. And what did you not know then on top of that?
Yeah, well, with something like this, there's a lot of mistakes that you can make and a lot of things you don't see coming. Like I didn't do any market research. That's one thing. I didn't do like a competitor analysis, like all the main stuff that a business school would try to teach you to do. We just jumped in and kind of like dealt with everything on the back end. So what was unique about my first deal is the apartments were already furnished because we furnished them for another reason. So we didn't have to go through like the how-to part of getting started. I already negotiated with the building and told them that I'm a corporate lease. And they're furnished apartments already. So like the front half of the deal was already done by accident. So what I was forced to learn on the back end was a guy is not one, a good interior designer by nature. And two, they're not the best housekeepers by nature. So I'm learning about myself a lot here. I'm cleaning toilets by myself. And then third, you don't necessarily know who's going to rent your place. And our first year we had somebody local. We had a local Houstonian book, a studio apartment that was like a 600 square foot studio apartment. And they crammed like 60 something people into that apartment and just like threw a rager. And the building was just so mad, super mad at me. So I had to learn to effectively try to screen out what I thought to be trouble guests. Even in 2014, 2015, that was something that Airbnb was dealing with. And that hit us really hard, really fast right away.
Yeah. And so you learned how to screen guests through that experience. And you know, so tell me, how did that learning experience go? You know, so what did you learn, right? Because I'm trying to think of ways where, well, if I'm a student or if I'm a listener, you know, what's the best thing that I would ask Sean? What are the things that you learned screening the people?
So I think screening the people is one very small sub-segment of the learning process. So I think to kind of give a good answer, you kind of have to back out a little bit. If you were like a student or just a normal person that started an Airbnb, like you had your own apartment, you put it on Airbnb, or you own a rental property, couldn't get a tenant, and so you decided to put it on Airbnb in the meantime, what people like learn and what I learned, and the screening guest part was one part of it, was it's a business. Like it's a whole business. It's not just real estate. It's not like you just get a tenant and it's passive or something. So like every time we had a problem, and the problem repeated itself, we noticed that there's a pattern, a predictable pattern of the same like obstacle, we would have to create a process or solution, a duplicatable solution. So in the situation with screening guests, we decided that we started putting in our listings that locals could not use the instant book feature. We'd actually put it in our house rules saying that if you live in Houston, you'll have to communicate with us first because we have a no party policy and we need to make sure that you're not gonna throw a party. And so if somebody who was a local booked, but did not reference that they read our house rules and knew that they weren't supposed to book, say, hey, sorry, just thank you for letting me book. I saw what you said. If they didn't read our house rules and went to book and they were local, we'd immediately call them and try to assess if they were high risk at that point. So that was like a process we built in order to run the company down the road. But that's like one of tons of things. Like you need a housekeeping protocol, like a cleaning process and, you know, a guest check-in process. And these are all just processes that you build from just repeatedly doing the same thing until you come up with something super efficient. And of course that was the beginning of what would then be 100 properties.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'm so glad you mentioned that, because I think a lot of people who, you know, they want to get at this game, you know, they want to make a living out of it. They love the cash flow. A lot of them aren't aware of how systematic it needs to be. You know, it needs to be in and out. It needs to be day in, day out. I mean, it needs to be very tight knit. And just with the limited experience I have in this space, you know, I found that to be true. So the first one, you know, was out of frustration. It was a high rise apartment. You made a lot of money, you know, more money than you know, you would have just renting it. When was the time, right? When was the moment where you kind of just internally made that shift and you're like, wow, like I want to spend more time at this?
It was November of 2016 when I first heard about the Super Bowl coming to Houston, when I first heard about it. Before then, you know, I was running my newspaper business and that was high stress anyway. So I didn't have time to like really think about new opportunities. And if I have one regret, it's that as a young business owner, I thought that businesses lasted forever. You know what I mean? And so I thought my newspaper business was going to last forever. Now it's still open. I still run that business, but I had this like ego trip about doing like the coolest stuff in media. And I just never gave time to this low key hidden opportunity. Like if I started building in 2015, like January, 2015, instead of November, 2017, I mean, I could have like 500 doors instead of 100 doors. Cause it was so much easier that back then to convince properties to say yes, it would have been insane, but I was dumb for not jumping in faster, you know?
Yeah, 100%. You know, I agree. And that is something that I myself have experienced. You know, when everything is going well, that you assume that you're untouchable. Mm-hmm. You know, you assume that things are going to last forever. And, you know, it doesn't. You're absolutely right. So the Super Bowl was the moment where you're like, wow, you know, this is something that I could do full time. And I know you said $15,000 in one weekend. And you said you got 10 apartments, right, in mm-hmm. preparation for that. How did you find those 10?
So I had one building I already had three in. I got another building. We negotiated four leases at the same time. And we had another building. We negotiated three leases at the same time. At that time, my best friend, he's actually still my best friend. He's a real estate agent. And he has access to a software called MLS, right? You get on MLS. And he's an apartment locator. So he'd go and find buildings that paid really big commissions. Like they'll pay him like 150% of the rent for if your rent payment was $2,000, they'd give him a $3,000 commission. So this guy made like $250,000 off of me in my lease run because he's just getting insane amounts of commissions. Cause every time we picked up a new building, if we picked up 10 leases, he'd get paid on every single one. So, I basically just said, hey man, like where should I get some apartments? And back then it was so easy. You could pick any apartment and it would be profitable. So he just would point me to the ones that made the most money. And he'd give me like a warm handoff to the property manager, go, hey, this company's really cool. You should work with them.
Yeah. So that is really cool, you know, because it sounded like he was very much of an assistant to you in terms of negotiating the lease. Because I know that's one of the biggest questions and potentially one of the biggest obstacles a lot of individuals who want to get into this business, they ask, you know, like, hey, how do I negotiate the lease with my landlord? And in my experience in negotiating with landlords in terms of getting them to sell me their building, a lot of landlords are seasoned, right? Let's leave it at that. So what would you say to those individuals, to the landlords? Because obviously you're an expert at this point. Mm-hmm. You know, what if they said, I don't know about this new thing? What would you say to the landlord who's, let's say, you know, 70, 80 years old and they have no idea about Airbnb and they're saying that, oh, it's a fad, it's a trend. What would you say to that guy?
So we actually have to back out of the question another step, kind of like last time. There's two main types of deals that go down. There's the single family homeowner that you're speaking of. And one group of single family homeowner is the more seasoned, you know, older, not tech savvy. Then there's the property management companies that represent the multifamily units, like the big ones, right? And so in 2015, there was no lease language that said you couldn't Airbnb, right? So my realtor didn't have to know anything. He just would have to find me apartments. I would go in, I'd sign the leases, I'd start Airbnb-ing. They go, hey, what's this? And like I said, I told you I was a company signing the lease and this is what we do. We talked about it lightly. Yeah. And so back then it was all good. You didn't have to know how to do it. But now, so now to answer your question, because now you do have to have a script really. And the single family homeowner script is much more involved, but in a way, even though it's more involved, it is a little bit easier because apartment complexes are way more like by the letter of the law. You can't really sway them as much, you know, they're harder to sell. So a landlord, you of course always have to remember that when you do pitch a deal to somebody that you want something from, it has to be valuable to them. You have to be like a partner for them. You have to provide a product that they want to buy from you. So you have to know your product. And so for rental arbitrage, your product is perfect rent payments, perfect tenant, long-term tenant, maybe even the last lease that they'll ever have to sign ever, ultra low risk, you know, and the change of the game here is instead of a landlord picking up a crybaby tenant that whines about everything, by picking up a rental arbitrage partner like us, we try to service that landlord to like us so that way they give us our lease renewal. So it flips the script on who's actually the customer here. So if you were to go to a 70-year-old landlord, you would first speak in a general enough way that they could start to understand you. Because any sale, if they don't understand you, they get intimidated, right? You can't lingo them out. So I always start with, I'm a corporate housing company. I start with that. And I'll call them on the phone. I'll be, hey, Mr. Landlord, I saw your property. I drove by or I saw it online. Looks great from the outside. I own a corporate housing company and we're looking for a few properties in this neighborhood. I would like to come by your property, take a look at the inside, see if it works for our purposes. And I would love to tell you about our business model and see if there's a good mutual fit. If you're available within the next couple of days, I'd love to bring you a coffee. We can have a conversation about your property. When's a good time for you? Close the meeting, right?
Nice.
Corporate housing company, saw your property. We're looking for multiple in your neighborhood. I'd like to meet you, see your property and talk about our business model. Can I bring you a coffee? So that's our opening script to get the meeting. From there, that meeting, they're going to walk through the property and show you. And then you're going to have to make a certain amount of small talk. And I actually have a course on this. We are releasing the beta version of our full course now, but because that full course is just so massive and it took forever to make, we released the sales portion previously as like pre-sale. So that's available. But essentially like it's like 6 hours or 7 hours of sales content. And it really targets that half an hour conversation that you have with a landlord.
Yeah.
Getting inside their head, finding out what their pain points are, walking them through the features and benefits of a corporate partner instead of a regular resident. And then after you make your presentation with a landlord, the biggest difference as opposed to a corporate housing company is you do not try to close the deal after you make your pitch. You actually open it up for questions.
Yeah.
Like, okay, so what questions do you have about that really complex thing I just showed you about? Because you want the landlord to catch up and understand everything. Because you're signing a contract with the landlord, and if the landlord ever felt like you slighted them, they will come after you later. In a single family, single family landlords have way more time to make your life a pain if you want to go right.
That's very true. Based on my experience, and usually a lot of the single family landlords, they're mom and pop operations, and for a lot of them, you know, you're talking about a big chunk of their life savings. A lot of their assets are tied up into these single family homes, and for a lot of these individuals, they lived in that house for 10, 15, 20 years. And they moved on to another place. So there is more of an emotional standpoint on that. But before we move on, I really want to make sure that we touch on this. Where can people find your course?
We don't actually have like a big advertising campaign. So if you went to the YouTube channel, you would find in the description of our videos that we have links to the courses.
Okay.
If you went to milliondollarrenter.com is just to talk to me directly. But yeah, go to YouTube, Airbnb Automated, and then below all the videos, there will be links to the courses. And we usually link ones when they're relevant. We're like, oh, this is about pricing strategy, like how to optimize rent property listings. And you'll show it's called our Closers Crash Course is the name of that course.
Nice. Yeah. Yeah. I really want to make sure people have access to it before we move on any further, because man, you put out good content, man. You know, you put out good stuff. You know what you're talking about. And
thanks.
For me, you know, I'm passionate about, you know, not only promoting the right people, but making sure that their products are on the forefront, you know, cause hey man, I'm sure you've seen it. There's a lot of products that I just will not endorse no matter how much money they pay me.
Yeah. I only endorse one product currently. I have one, and it happened because a company reached out to me, said, hey Sean, we like you. Would you endorse our product? I sent a response with a critique for the product. I'm like, this one thing is the only holdup. I otherwise love your product. They did not respond to my email. I'm like, oh, you guys don't actually care, do you? So I spent 4 days looking for a competitor product that I thought was better. I reached out to them and said, hey, there's an evil company in your space and I want to promote your product because you guys do it right. And so now I promote one product out of sheer principle.
Yeah.
And beyond that, I actually made a free course on YouTube because there was a guy in the Airbnb space who's constantly spamming ads to my audience to get them to buy his Airbnb course. Mm. So I'm like, we have more content on the channel than he has in his whole course because I saw the course. So I'm like, hey guys, I'm making a free YouTube course, head to toe. It's a playlist, everything you need. So you don't have to buy somebody's getting started on Airbnb basic course. Mm. So now, of course, the bar is really high at that point. If you give that much information for free, if you're going to charge for something, you have to be like the encyclopedia of the topic. So that's what's taken so long for us to actually create something worth selling is because we, of course, set the bar high by accident.
Yeah, 100%. I love it, man. So yeah, just real quick, I wanted to make sure people get your stuff because, you know, it's deserving, right? It's worth it. So real quick shout out, right? So you did that landlords, more emotional. Where were we? That's right. Okay. So you scaled up to 100 units, right? 100, mm-hmm. Arbitrage units, by the time you were right now, is that where you are right now?
Yes. Yeah, so that was 5 months ago.
Okay. Got it.
103 doors to be exact.
Yeah, 103 doors. So how did you scale up to that? Because I mean, it sounds like you've done it in a couple years. You went from 10, I think, to like 100. So that's a pretty big jump, man. You know, there's I know a lot of real estate investors who they work their entire lives and they can't get to 100 units, but you did it in 2 years. But obviously, it's a different model. It's a different industry. Mm-hmm. It's a different business. And I love what you said. Yeah, go ahead. Yeah.
I was going to say, it depends on what you mean by the question, because you're like, how do you scale from like just a business, like human capital standpoint is one. Like, how do you build the operations to 100 doors? But then just from a cash standpoint, I think is what most people ask. So like, I guess, what side of the fence are you on? Like which one do you want me to answer? Because I
don't want to give you a lot of time. Let's hit it all. So capital and also human capital and also the building the system itself, because all three are very important.
Cool. All right. I'll try to give you like a good concise on all three. So the cash side, here's the mechanics of cash and arbitrage. It costs about $5,000 to get into one door, furniture included. If you can get the first month or 2 months of rent for free, then you don't have to, since you don't have to pay rent, if you can make $3,000 of cash on a door, but you don't pay rent for 2 months, you just got $6,000 back in 2 months off of something that cost you $5,000 to start. Then let's say your rent is $1,500 for the next third month. You take $1,500 of that $3,000 and you put that into rent. So you have $4,500 of net cash after 2 months and you paid your month of rent. So now if you're booking like, you know, an extra $1,500 a month off of that one property, you now have all of your money back plus next month's rent coming into month four. So that's a really clean example, but we found that on average, it takes us 5 months to get our money back. So starting in 2017, where we made $15,000 in a weekend, we had 10 properties. With that $15,000, we get three more.
Yeah.
But because we're getting monthly income, for every five properties you have, you can pick up another property in a month. Because if it takes you 5 months to get your money back, five properties, you can do it in a month, right? So we were able to pick up five more properties because we had that $15,000 in cash, some other cash, immediately after the Super Bowl, right? And so if you look at the snowball effect of constantly reinvesting money, where you get so much of that money back right away, we've only really ever had to invest, you know, $10,000 at a time, $40,000 at a time. Our biggest deal we ever did, we blitzed at the end. In August to December 2019, we added 53 doors in 4 months. We doubled in 4 months. So it cost us, we probably had to play with a total of $100,000 in cash. Because of the way the money kept coming back, we put the $100,000 in, got money back from rents from Airbnb tenants, and just kept snowballing that money into new furniture. We're basically printing money for 4 months to get up to that.
Yeah. I mean, it's not like real estate where, you know, when you put a down payment on an apartment complex, you know, it's very tough for you to do another deal because you're putting so much money down. You know, and it does a long time for you to get that money back in terms of just traditional rent.
Yeah, because loans are regulated. You can only get so much of a certain type of loan, right? And then you have you have to be more and more creative the bigger you get because the banks want to know that you're not a risk, right? Yeah. So with us, the bigger we are, the less risky we look. We show a landlord our bank statement. It shows that we're printing, you know, $1.5 million, $2 million of cash a year in our bank. They're like, yeah, how many leases would you like, right? At that point, it just gets easier. So that's the cash mechanics. Human capital, you just need a general business model for this. So as you grow, you need a housekeeper per say 5 doors. And at about 15 doors, you can hire a property manager to run the territory and they handle inventory, telling the housekeepers where to go, making sure the housekeepers do a good job. One phrase every business manager should ever, never forget is continue to inspect what you expect. Too many managers get too busy to check up on their employees to make sure they're doing their job right. It's just expected they know how to do their job. Never make that mistake. And then you teach your leadership team to inspect as well. So a scope of control is something they'll teach you. There's a Harvard Business Review book on management. They talk about scope of control, which is how many people one manager can manage. I say 4 is good. You give a manager more than 4 people to manage and they can start to get spread too thin. So be careful. So just business tiered business basics there. That's how we built our staff up because hiring housekeepers is easy. It's not hard to find. We use Facebook jobs and we get tons and tons of applicants. So the vast majority of our foundation is built off of housekeepers. And then we have 4 four managers, and we have a couple, like, we call them reservations coordinators, and those are like customer service. So it's not heavily staff oriented. You just need to be able to hire housekeepers, and that's it. So that's the human capital side. And then that's also at the same time, the business organization side. You just need to know how to like structure it out right, so that way nobody gets spread too thin.
Yeah. Yeah. I love it, man. And so, you know, thank you, by the way, that was really good insight. I love that quote, you know, always inspect what you expect. And that's a phrase that could be used in any business, you know.
Absolutely. One of those like Lean Six Sigma kind of things. So yeah it's definitely, and that's why real estate is still business. You're in the business of real estate. Airbnb is just way more active than regular real estate. If you had a property manager that oversaw 100 of your doors, you want to inspect your property manager to make sure he's doing what you expect him to do with your properties. It's the same thing. You can't just turn a blind eye to something that you're paying money into.
Exactly. Yeah. I love it, man. So, you know, I want to talk to you about this because this is a very relevant topic right now. You know, obviously there's this big pandemic going on at the time of this recording, and, you know, I'm sure it'll be one of those things where, you know, 10 years later when you and I are in our 30s, you know, we're going to look back and laugh about it, you know? But how has the pandemic affected you, and, you know, how have you adjusted to what's going on right now in the world?
I'm going to screen share something to explain to you.
Yeah.
I've done a couple reports on this. I don't know if I can share a screen in here. Can I? Yeah. Got it. See. I figured it out.
You got it? Okay.
Yeah. Okay. Let me see. Can you see this chart?
Yeah.
I pulled this up for somebody else. So if you go back to April 4th, you see this dashed line, how it's kind of slowly raising.
Yes.
This is a representative sample of some of our Dallas properties. And March was when it all hit the fan. It went to as low as 31% occupancy at end of March into early April. And of course, as you can see, we took some hits occupancy wise too, but we actively manage our properties in a highly aggressive way. So even though we've been collecting less money per night, that green line is my line, where the dashed line is the market average.
Wow.
So my company, and my students, we're crushing it because we do what we have to, where a lot of other Airbnb operators, they're much more passive. They treat it more like a regular landlord would.
Yeah.
So by being like, basically by being passive, you're not responding to that market force. And as the Airbnb occupancy crashed, a lot of hosts freaked out, right? Mm-hmm. And a lot of people just shut their listings down, or they went long-term instead because they had the opportunity to pivot. The market is coming back up in some cities. Houston is not coming back up yet, but Dallas is coming back up more to a normal occupancy, just at a lower nightly rate. But our side, we're still making money because we're doing what it takes.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, one of the things that my partner Sam and I talk about all the time when it comes to, you know, the idea of Airbnb is, you know, obviously everybody asks, you know, especially with what's going on in the economy right now, whatever strategy gets brought up, they're asking, is this recession proof? You know, can this withstand, you know, some hard economic times? And my partner, Sam, and I'm going to give him all the credit for this one, but he made a really good point when he said, well, think about it. When times are tough, you know, I would argue that Airbnb might actually do better, because instead of going, you know, to that trip to Europe, or you're going, you know, take that trip to Cancun, you might just be traveling domestically. And instead of staying at a 4 or 5 star resort or a hotel, you know, and you've got a family of 5 or you got a family of 6, you know, what's the option there? Are you going to book 3 rooms at a hotel, or are you going to get one house that's going to be a lot cheaper? You know, so
yeah,
that's just very strong. Well, sorry, you were going to say something. Do you have something to add to that?
I do agree partially. I would say that owning an Airbnb is probably the most recession proof. I'm going to be honest. Let's say you own a home and you make it furnished. You are compound recession proof. It would take a very complex nature of like recession to hurt you. So you have short-term tenants who pay you a ton of money. Let's say the travel economy collapses like it just did. Airbnb got its butt kicked, but hotels are closing too, right? So this is very much, this type of like economic collapse has targeted travel and hospitality specifically. People aren't even leaving home because of stay-at-home order. So at that point, a landlord who owns their property could then flip to longer-term furnished tenants, right? You have a furnished apartment that you give at a good market rate, and you have somebody who stays for, you can even make it medium term, like 2-month, 4-month long stays. You can give your furnished accommodation up to like a nurse who's like a travel nurse, or a family that maybe they couldn't afford their rent payment, right? And so now they need a place to stay temporarily. And then let's say the housing market starts to really crash and people lose their mortgages and they default and get foreclosed on. Now rent prices go up, right? So, and if you own your Airbnb, you're much more recession-proof because it takes a few different things to put you down, right? Airbnb compared to hotels in general are more durable because in this economic situation, people want to socially distance. So they're going to not stay in a hotel. They're going to stay in a home because they get their own front door and they have their own kitchen. So to your point, Airbnb is more durable. It's not completely recession-proof, especially if you arbitrage, you are paying somebody's rent and then you're making the spread. And if hospitality drops, then we're collecting less money. So it's not like we're not profitable like we were 3 months ago. You know what I mean? We're still taking our lumps. But as it comes back, I think Airbnb is going to be – arbitrage is going to be in a unique situation in a couple months because as the rental market destabilizes and everybody's going, you know, unemployed and people aren't paying their rents, landlords are going to scramble for somebody that they know can pay the rent, and they're going to give away the farm on some leases. So even though right now sucks for Airbnb specifically, I think it's going to bounce back a lot faster than a lot of other businesses.
Mm, that's good. And where do you think we'll be? When do you think that's going to happen?
2 months.
2 months.
Yeah. And then 6 months to a year from now, when everybody's forbearances come due, foreclosures are going to happen. Home prices will probably drop dramatically. Like, you know, I'm speculating, but if that happens, then rent rates will go up. And if you signed 2 year long leases right now or 3 year long leases before the housing market crashes, your rent's guaranteed, right? And as rent prices go up, arbitrage is collecting the difference between what something goes for and what you're selling it for. And so right now, if you buy at the bottom on your leases and rent rates go up, your arbitrage play is so much stronger when the rent market goes up.
Exactly. Yeah, I love it, man. So let's talk about one more thing here before we kind of end this podcast. What's the one thing that you wish, Airbnb business owners, whether it be arbitrage or whether they're buying the property, what's the one thing that you wish they would know when they first start out?
The same thing that I like every person, whoever owns a business should understand, which is businesses have about 7 solid different categories of business. You know, you've got accounting, human resources, marketing, operations. We all come into any opportunity with personal biases from where we were most successful. Like I was a salesperson before I got into being a business owner. And I always try to run my businesses through my personal strengths, right? If I come across a problem, I'll try to solve it with my strength. But if you ever get into business, Airbnb or otherwise, understand that you are not enough in that one category to run all 7 parts of a business. You have to self-educate and you have to give respect to it all. So if you're an accountant, you still need to give respect to customer service and sales and stuff. Mm. You know what I mean? If you're a sales guy, you need to give respect to operations and accounting. You are responsible for them all. As soon as you pick up a property, you know, even in regular real estate, the moment you pick up something, you're running a business, you're responsible for all 7 major categories of running a business.
Yeah, I 100% agree with that. I mean, that's something I even teach, you know, our students, you know your value propositions. And I say that should be a list of only 2 or 3 things that you're really, really good at. And, you know, the quote I always tell my students is know your best and delegate the rest. You know,
yeah,
that's how
absolutely. If you know what your weaknesses are, try to gain some aptitude until you can find somebody who's good at it. Because, I mean, that's how Jack Ma from Alibaba did it, right?
Yeah.
You think he's capable of building that? No. He even admitted. He's like, dude, I'm not smart. I just found smart people. That's exactly right. Delegate what you're not good at. And you could be not good at anything and just delegate everything and still make it work.
That's true. Yeah, I have seen that happen for sure. Well, thank you, man. I appreciate you being here. And, you know, we had a phenomenal conversation. Appreciate all the value that you gave. And again, remind us again, your YouTube channel, Airbnb Automated, but where else can they find you? Do you have an Instagram? Do you have a website?
Yeah. Yep. Instagram is Airbnb Automated. I've got a Facebook group called The Hosts of Airbnb Automated. And then the YouTube channel, Airbnb Automated. Nice and easy.
Nice.
And then otherwise, I'll see you around Dallas. I'll just find me walking around.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I know. We talked about me going down there and things. I got some friends in Dallas, right? Shout out to Bryce. So we'll have to get some lunch or something. Or like what we talked about, you know, we got to hit the poker table sometime.
Absolutely. Yeah. So I'm in Philly right now. Casinos aren't open, I don't think. But as soon as they're open, you fly to Philly, we'll go play some poker. But then you fly to Dallas, I'll put you in an Airbnb and I'll feed you. I've got some restaurants.
Oh, snap. All right. Now we're talking. I love it, man. I love it. All right. Well, thank you for being on, Sean.
Yeah. Thanks for having me. See you.
Hey everyone, Daniel Kwok here once again. I hope you enjoyed that episode of the First Deal Experience podcast. If you're wanting to do your first ever deal or scale your existing portfolio, I recently wrote a book to show you how I went from 0 to 75 rental units in just 1 year. Just head over to 0to75units.com for your copy. Again, that's 0to75units.com.